KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Rachel Miro. No doubt after last weekend's earthquake near Napa, you've purchased or restocked your emergency kits and rehearsed with friends and family what the plan is if another big one hits. And then there's earthquake insurance, or probably not. Most Californians, if they've looked into it, have already determined earthquake insurance is far too expensive for what they're likely to get in return. But is that where we should leave this conversation? Should we just accept that this financial product doesn't work for most people and walk away? Or is this the time to address the need for change before the next big one hits? That's coming up in this hour of Forum. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Rachel Miro. If you don't live in California, you might presume everybody who can afford it has earthquake insurance. After all, how many reminders does it take? All those collapsed buildings, chimneys lying in the streets, people showing up at Red Cross shelters. After the Napa quake, we should know, right? But people here know, especially in recent years, that earthquake insurance in California can seem like a useless proposition. Only one out of nine Californians has earthquake insurance. Are most of us burying our heads in the sand, or is there a problem with the product? We've brought in people from all points and positions to talk about it this morning. Let's start with Bob Hartwig on the phone from New York, president and economist with the Insurance Information Institute, an industry trade group. Thank you for being here this morning.
Hey, glad to be here.
And we've got in studio Glenn Pomeroy, CEO of the California Earthquake Authority, a public-private provider of earthquake insurance. Good morning.
Good morning.
Amy Bach, also in studio, executive director and co-founder of United Policyholders, a San Francisco-based nonprofit that advocates for insurance consumers. Thank you.
Thank you, Rachel.
And last but not least, Robin Respo, finance reporter from Reuters News. Thank you for joining us on the phone.
Hi.
So, Robin Respo, I thought we might start with you. Can you tell us about the story you recently published on this question of earthquake insurance?
Yeah. On Monday after the Sunday's Napa quake, I was up in Napa, and I was wandering around asking people if they had insurance. I found an owner of a liquor store up there that was, when I found him, he was literally shoveling broken bottles of liquor into a dumpster outside of his store. And I asked him if he had insurance, and he said he didn't because he found it to be too expensive. After the 2000 quake, he had suffered a lot of damages and was priced around $7,000 to $8,000 a year for earthquake insurance alone. And during this, Napa's Sunday earthquake, he estimated that he lost 50% of his inventory, which he estimated to be $75,000 of liquor. And so he quick math, over 15 years or 14 years, he felt like that didn't make good financial sense. Earthquakes haven't come around that often, and he'd rather risk it.
So, like any good reporter, you're thinking that the individual story has universal implications. What did you find when you started to sort of review the big picture?
So it seems like, 20 years ago, earthquake insurance in California was much more common. And the turning point was the 1994 Northridge earthquake, where I think a lot of insurance companies who were offering earthquake insurance to businesses and homeowners were caught off guard by the cost of that earthquake. And it was after Northridge that you started to see the rates of earthquake insurance multiplying, sometimes tenfold, and the number of homeowners dropping from around a third of Californians to, like you said, around 9% now.
Well, that creates a great opportunity to bring in Glenn Pomeroy here. Can you tell us, it seems like things really shifted after the Northridge quake.
Yeah, it sure did. That was a point in time that, because of the nature of the risk, most insurance companies concluded that they really didn't want to be offering it anymore. It was just too risky.
It was, $12.5 billion in insurance claims after that one earthquake?
In paid losses, but by far, in a way, more than they'd ever collected in premium for that line. It amounted to $40 billion in property damage. Half of that was residential or homes, $20 billion, and about half of that was insured. So companies basically, for the most part, decided they didn't want to do this anymore. So this nonprofit thing was created by the state of California called the California Earthquake Authority to step into the breach and make coverage available to Californians who couldn't get it through the private sector. I just want to say, I don't know who Robin was talking to that was telling her about an $8,000 premium in Napa. The statewide average for a CEA policy is less than $800. So that's a statewide average. It can be a little more, it can be more in some areas and less than others, depending on the risk. But an $8,000 a year earthquake insurance policy. I'm wondering if that was for the business and not the home.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That was for his liquor store.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right, I want to make that clear.
But, you know, this is an interesting point. Whatever the actual premium is and whatever the actual deductible is, when we talk about earthquake insurance now in California, we're talking about a very limited kind of insurance. It's not going to take care of the wine bottles that spilled all over the floor or your china or even the cost of a short-term rental while your home situation gets worked out.
No, actually, quite a bit of that's incorrect.
Okay.
It could cover the wine as a covered food item. It would absolutely cover the cost that someone would incur if they had to live somewhere else while their place is being made safe again. There are so many myths and misunderstandings about earthquake insurance out there today, which is why I'm grateful you're doing this program, and hopefully we can clear some of those up.
So let's imagine that I'm a consumer and I've got a, you know, 3-bedroom, 2-bath house, I don't know, mid-century ranch somewhere in a suburb. What am I looking at roughly?
In terms of how much it's going to cost?
Yeah.
The exact answer is it just depends. And I don't mean to be flippant. The statewide average is about $800 a year. But then the best way to answer your question is to have you go to our website and go to the premium calculator, stick in your address, the age of construction of your home, and those factors will play a big role in determining what that exact premium is. But the premium calculator is so easy to use, and in an instant you could get a pretty good estimate of what you'd be looking at. And then visit our website to see the kind of coverage options that are available. You can insure your structure. You can insure up to $100,000 worth of your contents. You can buy more in terms of additional living expense coverage for those motel stays you were talking about if your home is badly damaged. There are a lot of coverage choices out there, and the cost of the product is just going to depend on the choices that the consumer makes.
Amy Bach, if it's such a reasonable product, why aren't more Californians on board with it?
Well, for one thing, people do often go on rumors, and there is a lot of misinformation out there about earthquake insurance in general, including in the agent and broker community. You know, there's a lot of folks out there selling it that really don't know about all the options. So I think, United Policyholders' message to the public and all the tools that we've been putting out through our Roadmap to Preparedness program is, don't just assume it's not a good buy for you. Do the math. And when I say do the math, I don't mean just as the gentleman with the liquor store did, saying, okay, this loss happened to be $75,000. If I had been paying insurance all that time, it wouldn't have been worth it. But actually, you really got to get out there, look at your options in the market. Don't just get one quote. Get three. The CEA is only one earthquake insurance seller in the state of California. There are a number of other insurance companies selling it. But also, when you do the math, you got to understand, if you have no insurance, that means you're carrying 100% deductible. So if it's the deductible that's bothering you, look beyond that a little bit and really do the analysis. How much equity do you have in your home? What kind of soil are you on? And if you do the research and you get three quotes and it just doesn't pencil out, okay, don't buy it. But just don't say, okay, earthquake insurance is a ripoff, so I'm not buying it.
Bob Hartwig, I know from New York, earthquakes don't seem quite as urgent an issue, but are you hearing what you want to hear from Glenn and Amy here?
Absolutely. Both Glenn and Amy have had a lot of valuable tips for consumers already, and you do need to do the math on any type of insurance that you're likely to buy. As Glenn mentioned, the cost is actually quite reasonable on average across the state, $800 on average. But what I will tell you is that what we've seen in a state like California, where we had as many as one out of three homeowners purchasing the coverage nearly 20 years ago, and we've gone down to maybe 10 or 12% today, we are seeing something that's a problem like this across the country, and it's not restricted to earthquake coverage. When we have major disaster threats like an earthquake or in other parts of the country, such as flooding, and in particular associated with hurricanes, we see that the longer the time interval that exists between successive events, we wind up seeing the take-up rate for the coverage fall. And so if you look at someplace like California, it was 25 years since the last major quake in the Bay Area. It's been 20 years since Northridge. The reality is that many people living in California today have never experienced a major quake or weren't old enough to remember it when it happened. And so it's easy to rationalize not making the purchase. And then there are other reasons, of course. You can talk about the cost. You can talk about the deductible. And then more recently, there is the perception, and Amy talked about misunderstandings, but there are a variety of misperceptions about the government coming to your rescue afterwards.
Right. Now, like FEMA's going to do it. Taxpayers are going to do it.
Well, exactly. And that is absolutely incorrect. There's nothing that buys peace of mind like a insurance policy that is going to pay, and it's going to pay quickly, and it's going to pay for exactly the types of damages that you had. If you talk to many people who were relying on government aid in the wake of Hurricane Sandy here in the Northeast, some of them are still waiting. And here we are nearly 2 years later. So there's really no substitute for private insurance or insurance through the CEA here. Really, through the government, the most you can possibly get is maybe about $32,000. You might get a loan, which has to be paid back. So in all told, the amount is likely to be it's not going to be sufficient for you to recover. You may have to pay it back, and you don't know when you'll get it, if you'll get it at all.
Glenn Pomeroy, I can see you eager to jump in here.
Well, all that was well said. Agree with all of it. This is an out of sight, out of mind kind of deal. We experienced last Sunday the biggest earthquake Northern California has felt in 25 years. So it does lull folks, all of us, into a bit of a false
big
sense
shakers
of complacency.
Focus the mind in a way nothing else
you
will.
You bet. Yeah. So the way the CEA is organized is insurance companies joined our organization, many of them did, and so their agents sell our product. Their adjusters are out there on our behalf today adjusting the claims that we've received so far from NAPA. I completely agree with what Amy said, though, in terms of what consumers should do is check around. We encourage that. We're not for profit, so we're in this to protect homes, not for shareholders. Whether a home is insured with us or one of the other companies that's operating out there. We sell about 70% of the policies sold in this state, but we're thrilled if anyone buys an earthquake insurance, whether it's through us or through a non-CEA member company. The big one's coming. The big one wasn't on Sunday. That was a moderate earthquake. It was really pretty minor compared to the Loma Prieta earthquake 25 years ago, and the one that we know is coming in the future. All of us need to do a better job of getting prepared.
Amy Bach, I mean, from the consumer perspective, when you look at the lay of the land, the products that are out there, are you satisfied? Do you feel it meets the needs? There's something on the menu for almost everyone?
No. So I have to be the skunk of the garden party for a minute here. I think Glenn and his team at the CEA have been doing a phenomenal job getting the CEA financially strong and trying to innovate and give people options. And there are some better options now than there were when the products first came on the market. And I know Glenn's working hard to get the word out there, and we are helping with that. But that all that said, the fact is that if you buy an earthquake policy in California and you have a 15% deductible, as most people have, it's very unlikely you're going to see a payout except for the big one. So really, it is a little bit like a high deductible catastrophic medical plan. You know, it's in some ways almost like having a $250,000 deductible on your health insurance. That's a little bit of an extreme example. But the fact is that people have to recognize that they're not going to see a payout unless there's a real lot of damage. And so what I'd love to see, in addition to the innovation that the CEA is doing, I do want to see some products that will generate repair cash for people, because our organization has been working for 22 years in disaster areas, and what Bob said about FEMA, and it is a myth that the federal government's going to come riding in with bags of cash, but the reality is that's what people need. People need money to replace their essentials and to make the repairs. And if these policies are not delivering that money, it is a disappointment. And I'd like to see us continue to innovate.
Robin Respo, I mean, you had an eyebrow-raising story there of that business owner. When you were out there in Napa and environs, were you talking to people who were, A, expecting the government to ride into the rescue, or B, aware of what was out there on the insurance market?
I think that with this business owner, he was offered, or he was thinking about a loan, a federal loan, but his feeling was, I feel like the government should subsidize earthquake insurance to make it cheaper. And but in general, I do think that people think that if it's big enough, the government is going to come in and help them. And Bob's completely right that people who were affected by Sandy, some of them are still waiting for that money. And I think that's, I think that's not a good bet.
Yeah, this is, Bob Hartwick, if I could jump in here.
Yes.
For a second. If you're waiting for the federal government to jump in with a federally subsidized program for earthquake coverage, it ain't going to happen. Okay, and the reason is that the flood program is $24 billion in debt. So Congress is pretty much soured on that particular type of intervention. It's just really no interest, I think, in Congress right now for creating another potential liability for the federal government, in particular when there are private sector options available to cover that risk. And at the same time, most people are in much of the country, they're clamoring for smaller government, less in the way of taxes. Again, I would say the political environment right now, at least in Washington, which is trending towards smaller government and presumably lower taxes, is one that is really not receptive to this particular idea right now.
Glenn Pomeroy, let me throw this idea at you. Here in California, we have to buy auto liability coverage. Many of us have to buy homeowners insurance of some kind. What about the idea that we have to buy earthquake insurance? Would that improve the market? Bigger pool, perhaps, lower average risk, better costs for consumers?
Yeah. If we'd wake up one morning and suddenly every homeowner was required to buy earthquake insurance, we, the California Earthquake Authority, we could work with that. I just don't think that's likely to happen.
Because
of the political difficulty in imposing that mandate. If you add this mandated cost on top of every home sale, on top of every homeowner, I don't see that coming out of Sacramento. I don't see it coming out of Washington, D.C. So what we're focusing on at the CEA, while not disparaging that kind of notion, we're focusing on things that we can do now to make things better. And actually, we've already developed the product that Amy's asking for, and I want to describe it very briefly. And it broke my heart as I'm walking around Napa earlier this week, seeing home after home after home that could have benefited from this product if only they would have known about it. You can actually you can insure your structure, and you set a deductible, 10 or 15% of that coverage amount has to be damaged before we can pay a claim. But then you can insure all the contents, the things that are valuable to you inside that home, and set your own deductible on your contents, so that if you've got, let's say, $50,000 worth of content coverage with a 10% deductible on that portion of your policy, we can start paying for claims on your content loss once $5,000 has been met. And I'm telling you, there was a lot of that up there. So for people who think, oh, there's earthquake insurance, you have to have an enormous loss before I'll ever receive a cash payout. Well, that might have been true at one point. It might be true still for most of the policies out there. It's not true with respect to the California Earthquake Authority's choice policy. That's why I really am going to be focusing in the next coming weeks on getting the word out. We've got a new policy that's on the street. We just need to make more people aware of it.
Amy Bach, I want to go back to something you were mentioning earlier, evaluating your home and your insurance need with the awareness that earthquakes happen all the time, big and small. Seismologists and geologists don't even know exactly what's underground. They're learning now after the Napa quake about all the different fault lines in what is really a fault zone north of San Francisco. Is it wise to think that I, as a consumer, can make assessments, financial risk assessments, based on what I think I know about the land my house is sitting on?
That's a great question. You know, I'm a resident of San Francisco, living in a wood frame house, and I've done what I can with the knowledge that's available to me. And I made a determination that I would buy earthquake insurance. And that's, you know, that I did the math. But I'm also investing in some modest seismic upgrades. So what we say to people is, look, you may not know whether you're on bedrock or alluvial soil or whatever those fancy words might be. You can certainly go to the USGS website and at uphelp.org we offer people links and you can get a sense. But we just say, you know, use your common sense. You know, you live in the house, right? So you have a feel. Does your house shake when the muni goes by? I'm not saying that those are scientific, you know, criteria exactly, but, you know, you do need to apply some common sense. And how much equity do you have in your house? And, you know, if your house were to have over $100,000 worth of damage, what financial resources would you have? That's part of the analysis we ask people to do.
So I hate to put you on the spot, but would you be willing to tell us about the choices you made for your home?
Absolutely. When the CEA set up a safer plan a number of years ago, I signed up and they sent an engineer out and gave suggestions for how to make our house safer. They have a new mitigation grant program. People can check into that as well. I bought it. I am doing what I can to get my deductible down to 10%. I think 15 is too high for my comfort level. But honestly, I'm the only person I know who has it. A couple of my board members now have it because of listening
Jeez,
to me all the time.
If you could work on anybody, it would be board members.
You have it. The reality is that it really is your own risk tolerance. You know, some people just want to – it's not that they want to roll the dice, but they feel like they have to. But there's one other thing I want to mention. You know, people who live in hurricane areas, like Florida, for example, are paying similarly close to what somebody would pay in California for earthquake insurance. The difference is the deductible. You know, yeah, people down in Hurricane Alley, they had the sticker shock of having their insurance go from $1,000 to $4,000 or $5,000 a year. But they only have a 3 or 5% deductible. So it's a little more palatable. It's a tough sell out here because of that 15%. But now, you know, Glenn will tell you he's offering a 10. A lot of his competitors are offering a 10% deductible. So again, folks, just do the math before you make the decision.
Folks, we're talking about earthquake insurance. What's your story? Do you have it? Have you ever had it? Are you thinking about getting it now that you're listening to us talk? Call us at 866-733-6786. And now that you've got a pen at the ready, 866-733-6786. You can also email us at forum@kqed.org, or you can go to our website, kqed.org/forum. Add your comments and questions there. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Miro. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Rachel Miro. This hour, we're talking about earthquake insurance. Do you have it? If not, why not? And are you thinking about getting it? One of the people we're talking to this morning is Glenn Pomeroy, CEO of the California Earthquake Authority, a public-private provider of earthquake insurance. And Glenn Pomeroy, you have some thoughts about deductible deductible options.
Yeah, and if I could just get you to add nonprofit on top of the public-private,
right.
Because we really truly are in this for the people who want to insure their homes. We're not in this to make a profit. We don't make a profit. We do not have shareholders to be concerned about. And so what we've learned from our policyholders and others is they really want choices, and the deductible is a concern to them. The way the deductible works is whatever the percentage is, 10 or 15%, that's the percentage of damage that the insured value of the home must incur before we can pay a claim. Some people think they have to write out a check for that amount, and that's not true. There's no out-of-pocket payment required, but that is the triggering amount before our coverage kicks in. A lot of people say, yeah, I'd like even a lower deductible. So later this year, we're going to be filing for approval for a 5% deductible. Actually, some people go the other way with it, and they say, I'm mostly worried about my home being totally destroyed. Something catastrophic. I'd like a higher deductible. So we're going to be filing for a 20 and a 25% deductible as well, giving people a range of options from 5 to 25 and allowing them to make their choice. And their choices will influence the amount of premium they're going to pay. So it's all about empowering the consumer to make the choice so that if they believe they want to put in place financial protection on their home, their biggest asset in life, they'll have choices available to them to do so.
Well, we've got a great question coming from Seymour in Sacramento.
Oh, hi. I was thinking about the mortgage holder, and if you have doesn't the mortgage holder, the one who lends you the money on the house, bear a lot of the risk of the earthquake, and why aren't they insisting on insurance? And if they don't insist on it, won't the math tend to make it not a good buy for you?
Amy
well,
Bach?
That's a great question, and we've been asking for years why banks don't require their borrowers in California to add earthquake insurance, because, of course, they do require people who are in flood zones to carry flood insurance. So I don't see it happening anytime soon, but I think that would be helpful in the sense that if everybody were kicking in to the pool, it would be a healthier, more balanced pool. Where it is, the way it is now, one of the reasons it's expensive, more expensive than other products, is that you only have the higher risk people buying it. So you don't have those lower risk folks offsetting that. That's my perception. Glenn may have a different view.
No, I agree. And it's a great question. One of the reasons why the banks haven't been so highly motivated is they don't hang on to that loan very long. They have, for the most part, been passing it along to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And so Fannie and Freddie's California uninsured earthquake exposure is enormous. About 20% of Fannie and Freddie's entire portfolio is California, and 90% of that is uninsured. So there's a national problem waiting to happen, too, if there's a massive earthquake and most of the mortgages out here are uninsured. Banks ought to pay more attention.
Bob Hardwick, I'm wondering if you're listening to this from New York and thinking Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, oh, boy, let's add this to the pile of things they need to think about.
Right, and it's really the last thing that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac really need to think about. And, you know, we had any number of disasters in 2004 and 2005, and as it turns out, with the financial crisis after that, many people were foreclosed upon, causing huge problems to both Fannie and Freddie. And certainly they don't need that people are defaulting on mortgages as a result of their inability to pay those mortgages when their home is destroyed and they simply walk away. Now, it's also the case, however, that with respect to flood, as Amy mentioned, ostensibly, if you have a federally backed mortgage, the day you sign on the dotted line for that mortgage, you're going to be required to demonstrate that you have flood coverage in place. But many people leave it to lapse later on. And as Glenn mentioned, the banks basically try to diversify that risk away by packaging up thousands and thousands of these mortgages and then selling them on the open market. And so probably implicitly, you're actually paying a higher interest rate because, in effect, banks are having to charge a higher rate of interest, which is implicitly insurance premium, to compensate for that potential risk. But certainly, if there were compulsory coverage, it certainly raise the take-up rate, obviously, and as was mentioned, it potentially could lower the cost overall because of the fact that you'd have the lower-risk policies in there. But these sorts of efforts to mandate are typically difficult to get all parties on board associated with that, and you could look at the realtors. We faced similar problems on other issues in places like Florida.
Thank you so much, Seymour. Fabulous question. Another listener writes in, my concern is that if an earthquake is severe enough to significantly damage my home, there will be no land left under it. So it would never be allowed to be rebuilt. So how would the insurance cover rebuilding somewhere else? Glenn Pomeroy, you want to take that one on?
We insure the replacement cost of the home. So let's say that $400,000 home we've been talking about is completely damaged and the place, the property on which it sat, has become a sinkhole. We pay out $400,000. That insured takes that money and goes and rebuilds wherever they want. We insure the replacement cost of the home, not the market value or the land in which it's sitting. And so, insuring the structure insures them. It gives them the peace of mind. They will have the strength to rebuild, even if their entire property and the land on which it sits is destroyed.
Although, you know, I think as I'm reading that question, we all imagine the worst happening. Many of us don't imagine something less than the worst happening. I mean, you know, there's a lot of damage that can happen before your house disappears into the earth.
Sure. Yeah. And without earthquake insurance, whatever damage happens, you're on your own. With an earthquake insurance policy, if the damage is serious, if it meets the deductible, we're starting to help with the rebuilding cost. Or if you have that separate content coverage, you don't have a structural loss, but you got your contents are a mess like they are up in Napa. We can move in and provide costs to replace those items as well. So,
and this is Bob here. If I could make another comment, we had a discussion about mitigation earlier, and we're talking about damage to homes. To the extent that the homeowner takes the time and effort to adopt some mitigation measures that would help their home better or business better withstand an earthquake, they are adding to the value of that home. Many people think the only way to add value to your home is to do something like putting granite countertops or oak cabinets or a hardwood floor. The reality is when you put dollars into making your home or your business earthquake resistant, you're adding value. When you put that home on the market someday, all else equal, your home's going to be worth more than your neighbor who did not take those same steps. So you are making an investment in your home.
Amy Bach, because you've admitted that you've done something like that, can you tell us about some of the things you were told to fix?
Sure. Well, the easy ones, strap your water heater so it doesn't fall over and start a fire. That we'll get back to the joke, though, about about the last one out after an earthquake lights a match, right? Okay, that's a bad joke here. But the point is, you do want to strap your water heater. Shear panels if you live in San Francisco, you have a soft story or you have a garage, you want to get the plywood panels up. You want to make sure your house is bolted to the foundation. Those are the economical fixes. Putting a gas shutoff valve is another one. There are some bracing you can do if you have around your garage. There are really a lot of different levels of strengthening you can do. It's a little tough to get experts to agree, though, on which is the biggest bang for your buck. But the ones that I mentioned are the basics.
Glenn Pomeroy, you want to add to that?
Yeah. People could jump on a earthquakebracebolt.com portion of our website and educate themselves on some simple steps that a lot of people can take to go into the home. If done correctly, put in some bracing and bolting. Sometimes these projects don't cost more than $3,000 to $5,000, and we can help. We're developing programs to help with the financing of those costs as well. So I think Dr. Hartwig is exactly right. It makes so much sense to spend a bit of time in prevention, and you're going to avoid a lot of losses after when the big one hits.
Bob Hardwick, I think this next one is coming up for you. Liz in Daly City writes, is earthquake insurance of any value to individuals who own a condominium? Our homeowners association has repeatedly voted down earthquake insurance for all 11 of the buildings on our property.
Well, absolutely. Whether you live in a single-family home, whether you live in an apartment complex, or whether you live in a condominium, it's absolutely of value to you. And I'll probably let Glenn chime in here to talk about the idiosyncrasies of condo policies in the state of California. But absolutely, there are different rules in terms of what's insured. The condo will have property and structures that are in common that will need to be insured. And then you, as a condo owner or separately in an apartment complex, complex are going to be responsible for insuring either the condo which you own, or in the case of an apartment, the contents, your possessions there. Glenn, maybe you want to add to that?
Sure, just a little bit, because you got it right. Basically, you can insure the condominium association has the opportunity to insure the whole structure, but the condominium owner of the unit itself can insure basically from the wallpaper on in, the cabinets that are built in, so forth, the contents that they put inside there, and you can insure against receiving an assessment from the condominium association if there's a loss that's spread amongst the condo owners. So condominium coverage, renter coverage. You know, about half the population in the Bay Area are renters, and renter's insurance is incredibly inexpensive. It costs about a couple cups of latte a month to put in place a policy to insure your possessions that are dear to you in your apartment, and $120-$130 a year. So we really encourage, especially a population of the Bay Area that is so heavily focused on renting, to explore the affordability of renter's insurance.
Renter's insurance, I can speak from personal experience. When you think of all the things that worry you, I don't know, somebody tripping on a rug in your apartment, or thieves coming in the night to steal your iPad, it's just ridiculously cheap. Robin Respo, I don't want to let you get away here from the conversation. Did you talk to renters who were insured or not insured?
You know, I didn't, but from personal experience, I know some people who were in whose apartment caught on fire about a year ago in the Mission and did not have renter's insurance, and I can tell you that those people and all of their friends now do because of the catastrophic losses they experienced, and it's true, it is very inexpensive, and it's definitely worth considering, I think.
Amy Bach, it seems like a personal tragedy in one's social circle may be the most compelling reason for people to rethink their insurance portfolio.
Well, that is absolutely true. And there are certainly people up in Napa that are saying, I really wish I had bought earthquake insurance. But renter's insurance and adding the extra for earthquake, you have to affirmatively add it, is a no-brainer. I mean, really, our organization has a publication, What's Up with Renter's Insurance, in English and Spanish. We're actually partnering with the cities of Oakland, San Francisco, and the CEA on a big outreach campaign this fall to tell all the renters out there, hey, this is something you ought to be buying.
Let's go now to Neil in Menlo Park.
Yeah, this dovetails, I think, with a lot of the comments. Is there any risk-based insurance that is available, or is it just going to be a grant if you sign up with a CEA program or someone else? And also, if you could talk maybe a little bit more about why major insurers, State Farm, USAA, Amica, are not, if it's true, not offering earthquake. And if you could give one great example of a 1,500 square foot house. I know it all depends, but I think one clear example of how much it would cost and what would you benefit would help all of our listeners.
Okay. Thank you. So the pricing of earthquake insurance is risk-based. We take into account where the home sits in relation to the fault. That comes in on the premium calculator. When you enter the zip code, the risk is automatically calculated. After the Northridge earthquake in 1994, when the insurance companies got their clocks cleaned, most decided that they really couldn't manage this risk anymore. In fact, the rating agencies were almost requiring that they get out of this. And so the way forward, you mentioned State Farm, the way forward was the CEA was created, and State Farm and many other companies joined the CEA. So State Farm, obviously remained in the California homeowners market, is now offering homeowners insurance and earthquake insurance. It's just that when they offer earthquake insurance, they're offering it through the nonprofit California Earthquake Authority. So I think that's the best of both worlds as far as consumers are concerned. And the $1,500 home, what that premium is, again, you know, it's just going to depend on where that home sits. The average is $800 a year. It'll be that $1,500 square foot home will cost less to insure. If it's in Sacramento where I live, it's going to cost more than that. If it's sitting on the San Andreas, somewhere down here in the Bay Area, it just really all depends.
Amy Bach?
It also depends on the age of your structure. Mm-hmm. There are a number of competitors to the CEA, so companies that didn't join There's that flat out won't insure a home that is 100 years old or even 60 or more years old. But if your home, if you do get quotes, you're going to find for a 1,400 square foot home in San Francisco, somewhere in the range of $2,000 to $5,000, depending again on the insured value under your home policy. They're going to match.
I just want to clarify here. When I said earlier only one of nine Californians has earthquake insurance, it's one of nine California homeowners who has earthquake insurance. I'm sure this next question you guys are all going to love. A listener writes in, we bought a home in San Francisco 2.5 years ago. At the time, I was adamant about purchasing earthquake insurance. However, when the time came, my insurance agent talked me out of it. Glenn Pomeroy, it seems like you have a major problem on your hands.
Yeah. I if that person would give me a call and give me that agent's name, I'm joking, of course. But you know, that's unfortunate. I don't know who that agent represented. But
it gets worse. I got to keep reading here. Yeah. So this insurance agent pointed out that the home that was built in 1890 had survived all the major earthquakes and that it was also in the middle of the block. So this agent felt, or perhaps still feels, that it's usually the houses at the end that fall down, not the ones in the middle since they are buffered on both sides. This is not what science tells us.
Maybe that agent had some other policies they wanted to sell the person instead of earthquake insurance. I don't know. But in my opinion, they gave horrible advice. And if that earthquake happens and that home is badly damaged, that caller will rightfully have a very serious conversation with that agent who did not do that person a good service by talking to her in that way. Earthquakes are so unpredictable. They happen so infrequently. But when they do, the question is, are you going to be prepared financially to survive and recover? And the only way to do it is with an earthquake insurance policy, because that agent represents a company that specifically excludes earthquake damage from their homeowner's policy. You got to add on a separate earthquake insurance policy in order to be protected.
Rachel, can I just add that?
Yes.
Insurance companies have to take on a tremendous amount of risk when they offer earthquake insurance. And I think, you know, the great thing about the CEA is that they're now taking on the risk for many policy holders. But if you think about it, how the infrequency of earthquakes and the utter destruction that they sometimes come with is just, there's so little data out there compared to other types of insurance. For example, with auto insurance, you have a lot of cars on the road and they're always driving, and an auto insurance company can look at, you know, a long streak of history and say, on average, this number of accidents happen a week, and this is, you know, our average payout. But with earthquakes, it's a tough number to calculate. And Glenn will tell you about how he has to take into account things like demand surge, where if your house costs $400 million to rebuild, how much does it cost when every house on the block also needs to be rebuilt at the same time? And suddenly the price of construction labor and construction materials go way up. So, I mean, I could see insurance companies not wanting to deal with that, which is, you know, a great reason why, it's a great thing that the CEA is taking that on.
Amy Bach?
I have sort of this instinctive reaction when I hear people say, oh, earthquakes are uninsurable because it's so unpredictable. I don't agree with that at all. I mean, you know, we have data. We know from wildfires that wipe houses out to the ground. We know what that costs. You know, we know when there's a hurricane, we know what that costs. So I don't think it is an uninsurable risk. There's no question. Private insurance companies are skittish about this risk. It's clear. They are, you know, they see earthquake differently. But that doesn't mean that there shouldn't be a product out there that is affordable and that will be predictable for the consumer in terms of this. I know that if I have this security net in place, then it's going to give me X amount of resources when I need it. That's what I think consumers are entitled to.
Bob Hartwig, do I hear you trying to jump in there?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I would say the science of earthquakes has really progressed enormously over the past 25 years, and we probably understand more as an industry, and the scientific and academic community understand more than we ever have in history. And the ability to model these types of risks has helped us learn about how much earthquakes might cost, not only in terms of, say, the number of claims, the cost of these claims, and also where they might occur. We're learning more and more every day. And I think that insurers' greatest concern is being in a situation where they're not charging a rate that reflects the true risk, and they do need to earn a profit. They are for-profit companies, and or even those that are mutuals still need to earn a reasonable rate of return sufficient to keep their financial strength ratings alive. So these are all very important to keep in mind. So insurers insure very risky things all over the planet, earthquakes and far riskier sorts of perils. So I think they want to make moves in this marketplace, but they need to be able to do it. They need to be able to do it profitably.
A lot of people are writing and calling in asking for more information about renters, and we talked earlier about renters insurance. But the truth is, if you're living in a building that is uninsured for earthquakes, you've got a bigger problem. But what kind of leverage does a renter have with landlords?
Well, probably anyone could chime in on this, but again, if you are a renter, there are two issues here. When you're a renter, that's different from being in a condominium. So you can at any time pick up the phone and get a renter's policy with the separate earthquake policy, and your landlord has nothing to do with that. The landlord does own that structure, however, and it's going to be up to the landlord to insure that premises. And whether they do or not is up to them. You could urge them to do it, but they, at the end of the day, own the structure. When it comes to a condominium, there is a condo board that is going to make those decisions. That's the distinction.
Yeah. Then, with respect to renter's insurance, the renter needs to take care of him or herself, and renter's insurance does exactly that. They can insure up to $100,000 of their contents. They can insure up to $25,000 if they need to live somewhere else while the apartment is being restored, and all this for literally two cups of latte a month. And get this, the renter's policy comes with a flat $750 deductible. It's not 10%, it's not 15%, it's $750. And once that's met, we're paying out on those coverages. So as Amy said, renter's insurance is an absolute no-brainer. And in this Bay Area, about 2% of the renters have it. So we're very excited about this initiative we're rolling out next month. Our organizations with the cities of Oakland, San Francisco, being joined by the personality of Mario Lopez, we're going to be getting the word out in a concerted effort to see if we can move that needle.
Amy Bach, I want to ask you about something Glenn was talking about earlier, the choice plan. Mm-hmm. Is that something you can comment on?
Well, I certainly like the option that the CEA is now giving people to have a separate deductible for contents versus structure damage, because it is true that the majority of the losses, say, in Napa are to contents, that's where people are looking to get some help. Now, I don't know how the pricing is going to play out. But I guess as a general rule, it's much better for the consumer to have a lower deductible on the payout side. On the pricing side, we tell people get a high deductible. But when we say get a high deductible, we're talking about get a $2,000 deductible on your home policy or a $1,000 deductible on your auto. We're not talking about a 15% deductible that means that you don't get paid until there's over $100,000 of damage. So again, I like the choice plan a lot because it has a lower trigger to get the property owner some cash to pull their life back together.
Let's turn now to the phones. Brendan in Oakland.
Yeah, hi. The question I have, I think I'm one of the high-risk individuals you've talked about. I just purchased a home about a year and a half ago on top of the Hayward Fault.
Congratulations.
Oakland. Thank you. So I've done pricing on sort of the Earthquake Authority website, and I've noticed that the premium can be very different depending on the age of the home.
Right.
So my home was originally built in the 50s, but we put in an entirely new engineered foundation last year. There's been a lot of upgrades, and I'm curious about how I get a policy that's sort of correctly priced to the true built condition of the home.
Well, that's a great question. And to be honest with you, we have more work on our end to do on that. We offer right now a 5% discount for an older home that's been properly mitigated, and we need to do better than that, and we're working on it. We're going to be filing for a much more significant premium discount for mitigated homes later this fall. That'll work its way through the regulatory process, and we'll be out there in a year or so. And then the mitigation discount will be 20%. But frankly, we're going to push to see if we can go higher than that. And so we're formulating a big scientific research project. It's ultimately going to involve shake tables and the rest. And we're going to do everything we can to maximize the discount that's going to be available for a situation like yours that have taken the proper steps to make that older home stronger. Right now, whopping 5% discount, and you're owed better than that, and we're working on it.
Brendan, thank you so much. So last question, Glenn Pomeroy. A lot of people are going to be thinking, we haven't seen the big one.
Right.
You know, Napa was a wake-up call. It could be much, much worse. And these days there are more Californians with bigger, fancier, more expensive homes and belongings in the way of Mother Nature. Is your organization ready for that? Could you handle it?
Oh, great question. Absolutely. We have tremendous financial strength. We have $10 billion in claims paying capability at the ready. That's not only for the capital that we have, but the reinsurance that we buy and the ongoing relationship that we have with our insurance companies. We're ready for a event that's so big it's going to happen only once every 450 years. Massive. So I don't lose sleep at night over, are we going to have the money ready? Well, we could handle two Northridges if they were to both happen today, for example. The problem is, unless things start to change, the day after that massive event occurs, we're going to find that so few people have financial protection, and that's where the real problem is going to lie.
Amy Bach, any last words?
Yeah, I mean, we have nowhere to go but up here because, you know, there's so few people carrying it now. We can only get more people on board and better solutions. And I get that it's a difficult choice, and I just encourage people to use our resources and make the best one for them.
Thank you so much. Amy Bach with United Policyholders, a San Francisco-based nonprofit that advocates for insurance consumers. Glenn Pomeroy, CEO of the California Earthquake Authority, a nonprofit provider of earthquake insurance. Thank you, Bob Hartwig, president and economist with the Insurance Information Institute, calling us from New York. And Robin Respo, finance reporter from Reuters News. Thank you all. And you've been listening to Forum. I'm Rachel Miro. Stay tuned.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.